What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the World on Drugs podcast. I'm your boy, Steve, here, and we got a what? Another banger on our hands, folks. This is going to be our first triple dip app, okay? Some people double dip. I say dip again. Trip it up. Someone, you double dip, you say, you know, this time I use the front part of the pretzel, second time uses the bottom part, and people go, hey man, you're double dipping, say, this is what I say, and you put your fucking thumbs in there, and that's what we're doing with this one, guys. This Woody Harrelson fellow, we got Lisa Traeger. This is part two of three. Yeah, you know what, Lisa came in and we partied, folks. We went all goddamn night. One of my favorite guests. If you don't know what's going on, here's a little synopsis. Seems like every day a new skeleton falls out of the closets of Hollywood, but rarely does news break of something as high profile as that of Charles Voight Harrelson, father of Woody and Brett Harrelson. Yup, that Woody, folks. Charles Harrelson was a hitman, a card shark, a womanizer, and maybe, just maybe, associated with the murder of JFK. He was convicted of two murders. Texas Rangers believe he has killed dozens more people. But one of those people he killed happened to be federal judge Joe Wood. Here's a rule we've learned on this podcast. If you're going to kill someone, don't make it a judge. Unless you're in South America. And then I think you can really just get away with anything if you have enough money. The investigation that followed ranked second all time in total expenditure, only behind the JFK assassination itself. But in retrospect, the case had more holes than Swiss cheese. This is the story of a Texas outlaw, of the rise of gambling, of the mob, hypnosis, the Cubans, and one of the biggest stories never told. This is the story of Charles Voight Harrelson. Ding, ding, ding. Ring a bell, folks. If you're hopping in midway, listen. Can you hop in a movie midway? Yeah, you can. But I wouldn't hop on this one. Get on the first train and come on back around, buddy. This is Woody Harrelson's fucking dad. He might have been involved in killing JFK. You don't want to hear how it started? Because I can tell you what, folks, it started good, and good in the way that it started bad. But yeah, so this episode was done by my producer, Gray Livingston, my guy GL. Shout out to you, champ. If you're not looking here, folks, I'm going to start loading stuff up on the YouTubes again. What happened with my YouTubes is I'm banned from the YouTubes. Why? Is it because I was uploading videos of me with nipple tassels dancing in the moonlights of West Hollywood? Maybe, but those are on privates on Vimeo. It's a Vimeo server, so I don't think it counts. No, what happened is I was uploading Punching Up episodes. If you're not familiar with... another gnarly thing I do. See, this is what I like to do in my life. I do comedy, pretty high stakes, you know, going up in front of thousands of people, in front of Burt Kreischer, getting paid a lot of money. And then I do a podcast where I do a large research paper on an insane criminal person, sometimes not even in jail, sometimes down the street. And I also have an internet show where I watch people beat the living shit out of each other as we make fun of them. So I think what people would call me is unbookable, going to be canceled. That's, I think, what my nickname is. Steve Fury, probably going to get canceled. Fury, they said my name twice. Yes, so Gray crushed it with this episode. Make sure you jump on the last one. We also got another one. Each one's an hour long. Steve, why are you splitting it up? Well, there's two reasons there, folks. One, I don't know if you really want to listen to a 3.5-hour podcast. Fair. Two, you know what, guys? I'm on tour doing arenas, 7,000 people a night. It's kind of hard for me to record episodes. So splitting them up works out. If you like the pod, just do it, man. Still kind of fun. Give you a little cliffhanger, you know? Cliffhanger for that ass. That's what we're all about here. Things for that ass. I've just been talking gibberish for the beginning of this podcast. Oh, man. And if you don't know, our guest is Lisa Traeger, one of my favorite comedians working today. You might know her from multiple Comedy Central spots, also on the David Spade show, Lights Out David Spade. She was on panel on that. She also has a Netflix special, 30 minutes on The Degenerates on Netflix. She's also one of my favorite people at the Comedy Store, someone that, you know, when you see someone and you both lock eyes and you both smile, but there's no fucking... You know, there's no fucking, she's a lesbian, and, you know, we're friends, but there's no fucking, it's just legitimate
happiness to see someone. And that's how I always feel there. Also, does our happiness normally involve fat blunt, maybe a drink or two? Maybe. Maybe. But guess what, guys? That's happiness. That's what people do to get happy. She's one of my favorite people. I really love doing this podcast with her, and she was excited the whole time. She has a great podcast on the what's the one? Karen Kilgraff and that other chick do like one of the biggest murder podcasts. Well, on their network is Lisa's, and she does a recap, I think, of every SVU, something like that. It's hilarious. She does it with Carla Klink. Check it out. What have I been up to besides gaining weight at an alarming rate? Just eating candy. Dude, I've been eating so much fucking candy. So much candy. So let's go over. It's Christmas. I'm going to be honest. Haven't really been doing that many spots. I think my last spot was probably Tuesday, and now it's Monday, so that's a long time for me, a week without doing a spot. I'm a little bit worried, Cupcake. I got a little OR regional room spot tomorrow at the Comedy Store. But shout out to Philly. I'm going to Philly for 2 days to bring in the new year with Bert. I'm wondering, do I bail on the store spot? Is it a good look? No. Do I want to get Omicron? No. Do I want to get Omicron for a $20 set that makes me not go to Philly and make a lot more money than that? No. Do I want to get up? Yes. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do, man. It's kind of all up in the air right now. We'll see if I'll even be able to go to Philly, man. A couple people involved in the tour did get Omicron, so, or they test positive for whatever, so we're going to see if that show even happens. How do I feel about that? I live the best life anyone could ever live. I have a fantastic girlfriend. I'm in the coolest comedy club in the world. I have great friends. And I'm touring with my favorite comedian. That being said, not home very often. Not home very often. Last weekend, we went to Joshua Tree with Jordan's family. Her stepdad and her mom. That was fun. Just hung out. Good. But, you know, it's a vacation. But, you know, I'm a guy who needs a vacation from my vacation. Do you understand what that one is? You know, you go on vacation, and I need a couple days after that to be on a vacation from the vacation. I can't just raw dog going into work the next day from a vacation. People are like, well, why aren't you recharged? No, that's not. Vacation doesn't recharge. My life's a vacation. Every moment of my life is fantastic. But I need time by myself, preferably weeks at a time. So I will be leaving in 2 days to go to Philly, another cross-country flight. Those are getting rough. I mean, listen, I wouldn't change my life with anyone in the world. I'm very happy. It's literally, it's funny. My friends in Sacramento, the guys I started with, they're like, dude, all you guys said you ever wanted to do was open for someone famous. And I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah, I'm fine with that. I hope to do more in my life than open for someone famous. But you know what, man? You know what? You know when I look out in that crowd, you know what I think? Not a goddamn thing. I don't give a fuck. I didn't have to bring people in here. I didn't have to do promo. I didn't have to wake up at 6 a.m. and go do a stupid radio show. I didn't have to go do a bunch of podcasts. I mean, I will do your podcast if you have a podcast. I don't mind. But I didn't have to do all these things. I just get to reap the rewards of doing 15 minutes in front of thousands of people. And then, like, I call myself, like, the little, you know, the shark, but then he's got that one little wormy, that little wormy fish on the bottom. He just goes, just fucking eats that shark's stuff. Yeah, that's me. Bert's the big shark. I'm just eating it. And you know what the little guy doesn't have to worry about? The little fish on the shark's belly, where the meal's coming from, where we're going, if I need to be protected, nothing. I got nothing. All I need to do is eat. So I kind of like opening for someone. Plus, you know, I think in 2 or 3 years, I'll have built my own thing. Where I'll be able to do my own stuff. But right now, I'm enjoying it. But that being said, flying across country in coach is fucking awful. Okay? I'm going to say that, folks. Okay? Let's see. Last, I'd say 45 days, I flew to and from Miami. That's about a 5.5-er. 4.5 to 5.5. Sometimes I exaggerate a little bit. Okay. Then I just did a Houston. That's a 4.5-er. Then I did an Ohio. That's about a 5-er. And now I have to go to Philly. That's about a 5, 5.5. But I'm getting to leave my dream. But, man, bro, I don't know, man. I'm just looking. Everyone would rather be me, right? And no matter what you get in your life, you always want to just complain, right? So what I was saying was that, you know, if this Philly one gets canceled, I wouldn't be that mad about it. I do need the money, though. And we are going to be home for 3 weeks. I don't leave until 17th of January. So it's going to be a good little recharge to be back. And that, folks, is why I'm back working out. You got it, folks. So old Stevie Boy checked in at a solid 228 heavyweight in the UFC. I'd be fighting Francis Ngannou. You understand that, folks? You ever seen Francis Ngannou? I was going to say something. It would have been racist, but it's not racist and didn't mean to be racist. But the man is the biggest, buffest person I've ever seen. Okay? And he's jacked. And we're like the same. We'd be fighting in the same thing? No. No, I need to lose weight. I'm disgusting. I'm a sad, fat, disgusting little man. And it's only going to get worse. So I'm leaving on the 17th. And I'm going to use every time I can to start losing weight. And I'm going to go. And I'm going to try. And I'll probably fail. I fail at everything. I don't fail at everything. A lot of times I win. All right, guys. I'm just losing my fucking mind. But yeah, so I was just going to try and lose weight. And it's because I only got those 3 days with Bert, so I can might be able to spike up, then go back down. And then by the time the end of the month one happens, I'll be able to start at a lower base, you know, because if I go into the next tours at 228, it's an average of 7 to 9 pounds a week. I'm going to come out of there at probably close to 245, 250. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with if you're 245, 250. Live your life. It won't be long. You probably got a lot of plaque in your heart, but I don't want to be that. I don't want to be me. I mean, I want to be me, but I don't want to be my weight right now. Okay. So, working to set a baseline with that. Checking in today at 228. 45 days, I'm going to get to 205. I think I can do it. I'm going to work on it. We're going to keep getting there. So, I went to Joshua Tree with Jordan's parents. I got to say a lot of things. You know, you may have gone on my Instagram and you heard me talk about mountain folk, okay? California is such a large place that we have different types of hillbillies, okay? Okay, you know, you go to West Virginia and you got your coal moonshine hillbillies. You go to Texas, you got your flatland yokel hillbillies. California is so big, we have multiple hillbillies, okay? And I'm going to put two against each other right now. Number one, hillbilly, the mountain folk, okay? It's California mountain folk. It's going to be people from Northern California to people on the kind of Yosemite Sierras. How do you know these people? Number one, they always drive a large, dark green Dodge Caravan. Every time. Okay, every single time. There's going to be a lot of stickers on the back. A lot of them don't make sense. Because they've changed their minds multiple times in their lives. Okay, number two, they wear large skate shoes still. Okay, large skate shoes. Kind of pants always have a little dirt on them. It's like, did you fall? Is that why you're wearing these? Got to be a flannel. Rat tail. It's going to be a lot of rat tails. Haircuts are a lot of, hey, buddy, I can cut your hair if you want, and you're just a buddy, okay? And the biggest one on mountain folk, because of the red clay, the bottoms of their shoes and feet are dyed red. I call them Chico feet. Chico, California is one of the biggest party towns in America. It was at one point. And people walk around there with flip-flops. But the thing is, you walk around with flip-flops in Chico, the red sand's going to, clay's going to get you, and you're going to get red Chico feet. So, mountain hillbilly, skate shoes, thick tongue, like a DC Osiris. I would go Kirkland brand jeans, dirt on them, like a large, almost like a paintbrush of dirt. Old flannel, probably a Carhartt jacket, not the fun Carhartts, okay, that you get at Bodega. These are Carhartts passed down through generations, okay. Flannel. Rat tail, jacked up haircut, smokes meth, grows weed, okay? You see that? You see the kind of person you're building here? That's why they're having multiple stickers on their car, okay? That's your mountain hillbilly. We've also got desert rats. Desert rats. These people are... It's Trevor from Grand Theft Auto 5. Okay, you understand what I'm saying here, folks? Desert rats. These people, car, multiple. It looks like someone built a car from multiple things. You know, one door's white, one's black, the whole car's burgundy. Normally an American-made car, you know? You're like, oh, I haven't seen a 98 Ford Taurus in a long time with the circle windows. That guy's still driving it. It's loud, not because it's supposed to be. Okay. This person, clothing, optional for desert rats. Optional. Okay. They're not coming with a little wardrobe here. They are running from everywhere. You know how far you got to run before you run in the arms of the desert? Well, only these people know. These guys are missing teeth, okay? And now this is because multiple reasons. One, been a lot of fights. Number two, rats don't go to the dentist. Number three, methamphetamines. So the thing that connects the mountain folk with the desert rats is the methamphetamines. So when I was in Joshua Tree, there were a lot of desert rats around. A lot of desert rats, too, will put an advertisement for their business on their car, but with, like, in the dirt on the window. You know, it's like, Jenny's house cleaners, 2 for $50. And it's written on your dirty window, and you're like, you can't even clean your car? And you think I'm going to let you in my home? That's one of these things. The people that are wrapping their cars in ads for their businesses, it's like, you think I'm going to let you babysit my kids? You don't have any brake lights. You can't even babysit your Saturn. So, went to Joshua Tree. A lot of desert rat people around. We walked around. You know what's interesting, folks? And I never knew this one. You know you can't bring dogs on national parks? Yeah, so her parent brought her dogs. And we had a lot of nerds, a lot of fucking park nerds trying to bully us with little snide remarks. I almost fucking took one guy's hat and threw it in the goddamn woods. This fucking dweeb came up to us. I mean, a fucking hiking dweeb. Okay? He's got a big floppy fucking hat. He's got, like, the fucking... You ever seen a dork put on sunscreen, like, in spots? Like, you know, a normal person rubs in and all over, but there's just, like, a thing on their nose and a line here. It's like, I don't... Do you even know what you're putting on your face? Think you're playing a football game against the sun here, son? This guy had a bunch over here. Looked like he had toothpaste on the side of his fucking mouth. I mean, even if he wouldn't have come up to me, I think he needed to be bullied. This guy comes up to us, starts talking shit. He's like, hey, there's a lot of, endangered birds, rare birds. I'm like, buddy, I've been walking for 4.5 miles. I haven't seen a goddamn living thing. There's nothing taking flight. This is a desert. It's closer to the moon than the desert. He was like, did you see the sign? I said, I didn't see shit. Why don't you keep walking? That's what I said. I would have got a little more feisty in him, but, you know, what do you do in front of your girlfriend's parents? Do you slap the guy and then they go, hey, this guy's pretty cool. You slapping people on a fucking hiking trail. Or do I go, well, you know, I'm sorry. And they go, oh, he's a pussy. Or what I did, I'm fine with it. I can sleep at night. But I want that dude with that stupid fucking hat and the Patagonia and the spotty sun in the sunblock to know I will find you. And I will give you a wedgie that you have needed. So, and we gave everybody presents. Got a lot of good presents this year. Gave a lot of good presents. Fun one is, that's it, man. That's all I've been up to. Other than that, you know, enjoy the show, guys. This is part 2 of 3. Also, you can't go to the Comedy Store podcast studio anymore. Because COVID. So I don't know how I'm going to record them. I'll probably just try to do them in my... here at my home studio that I've now built. But we'll see. Who knows, folks? No one knows these things. No one pressures each other. We just live and we love. I'm talking nonsense. This is Charles Void Harrelson. Shout out to my guy, Gray Livingston. And if you guys want to email me, DM me on Instagram. If you got something you like on the show, got someone you think I should look up, DM me on Instagram. I always check that stuff. And also, if you want a t-shirt, Venmo Steven-Fury, STEPHEN-FUREY, $26, and I will send you a World on Drugs t-shirt to your house. They've been going pretty good. They were going for hotcakes for a while, and then I just stopped. Then I just forgot to ever say anything about them. But I like wearing it. I think it's a pretty cool fucking shirt. And the logo's sick. So check it out if you want. Other than that, love you guys. Check out this one. We got Lisa Traeger in the building, folks.
Bye.
Charles Waldeers.
This is where it gets good, okay? So this is going to be a break in the pod. This is going to be the next one. Jerry Watkins, the man who accompanied Charles on the Helium murder, would go on to be a key witness in the case against Charles and Pete. Jerry claimed the two had met him in 1968 and that he was just an innocent bystander. But Jerry is shadier than he first appears. He was a World War II hero, but in 1957 he was busted trying to sell 300 machine guns to Fidel Castro and his rebels. Jerry O'Brien Watkins also has his own file in the FBI's database. This is the document. We're not going to look that up, but this is pretty good right here.
FBI documents are so long.
Yeah, and they're all like
all paperwork. Blocked out. Yeah, all these lawyers, so much paper. That's another thing. We're so no paper. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it's the best. You just look up things. You can even look up just in the paper itself what words you want to see. It's fantastic. Dated October 6th, 1998, the cover sheet reads, JFK Assassination System Identification Form, Agency FBI. Guys, it's not a fake thing, okay? This is a real thing I'm talking about. It's going to be in the notes. Document information originer FBI, date 07-15-60. Subject, CIA liaison material, Jerry O'Brien Watkins. I'm slurring a little bit, but I'm also excited and also a little drunk. On the following page, this appears. The subject is serving a 2-year sentence for Federal Firearms Act and Neutrality Act violations. He was interviewed by the Bureau, at which time he furnished information concerning his attendance at a Cuban guerrilla warfare school in 1959. He indicated that espionage and sabotage had been taught at the school, and he subsequently was assigned to the Department of Investigations of Castro's army. He furnished additional information concerning various individuals who allegedly were involved in activities on behalf of the Castro government, and several offices have been following the leads. The Bureau has disseminated information to interested agencies, including the CIA. On July 14, 1960, Birch O'Neill, CIA, asked liaison agent if there would be any objection to the CIA interviewing the subject. The purpose of this interview would be to question the subject in considerable detail concerning his possible knowledge of Castro's intelligence organization in Cuba. What all this means, right? That was a bunch of fucking nonsense, long-ass words I slurred through. Number one, Jerry Watkins received espionage training in Cuba from Castro's army. Number two, he was a potential liaison for the CIA. Number three, he was looked at for having been involved in the JFK assassination.
So is this how they got the lawyer? Through Jerry?
So we're going to find out at the end, they're going to say Charles was hooked up with this guy who was in fucking Castro's army. He had a lawyer that he should have never been able to afford. And if he shot JFK, normally kind of like the CIA, and you do that kind of best, it's kind of look out for you. And I think the lawyer did a bunch of weird shit, and it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. Wow, can you believe Woody?
Does Woody ever talk about this publicly?
So one of the only things Woody ever, I mean, we're going to get to it later, but one of the things Woody ever said about his dad was, he goes, my dad worked for the CIA.
Whoa. I'm thinking he's just a hillbilly this whole time.
No, his dad is a fucking, I mean, his dad is kind of a Texas hillbilly. They don't got hills there. Wild. Can you believe Woody fucking Harrelson's dad is
that what hillbilly comes from? The hills?
I think more mountain people. I don't think actual hills. That. Yeah. Definitely in California, when you start getting the mountains, they get a little wonky. Woody Harrelson's dad is the one tied up in this kind of stuff. Has there ever been a person or situation that at first seemed like a good idea, but later you found out you were surprised about it not being great?
Unfortunately for me, I know all red flags and warning signs, and I go straight in.
Yeah.
So that I just hailed Hitler. But I dated somebody who I knew was a compulsive liar and had a history of lying.
Were they hot?
So hot, yeah, so charming, so talented, you know, knows how to fuck, like everything. And then after we had broken up, just finding out like the depths and layers of lies for no reason. I'm like a chill, cool, like I was depressed for like 6 months, full therapy. Probably after a year and a half, I was able to get over this only 6-month relationship because it like fucked with reality, what I wanted, what I projected onto people. Like it was just so many layers. But yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, I mean, it burned so hot. And so it just felt like in the moment it was such a big thing. I had an ex-girlfriend who I lived with. I was about 22.
And she just kept lying. And not even about lying like fucking other people, just lying about random nonsense. And I kept catching her. And the last one was, like you, I'm a very chill person. And chill that I'm chilling, also chill that I just don't give a fuck what you do. Go do whatever you want, as long as it's, I'm going to believe whatever that person says until they prove me wrong. So she goes, I go to her house and she has three new posters, just posters on her bed. And I go, oh, these are cool. Where'd you get these? She goes, oh, I went to my parents' house and grabbed them from there. They're in my old room. And I take out the trash and there's three poster tubes from Amazon. And I go in there. I'm like, why'd you lie about this? And she goes, I just didn't want to tell you that I bought it. I'm like, why the fuck would I care if you bought posters?
Well, yeah, but then you're like, what fucking happened to you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
What happened to you? Because my chill element was we were long distance. So I was like, we should just be open.
Yes.
While we're long distance, and we're grown-ups. And if we go in
the same city, maybe make
them go. Let's just, and this person was like, absolutely not. I don't want to do that. Fuck I want to wait to fuck you. Like, fuck I want to be with you. And then we break up and I find out just like fully hooking up with people that I had fucked. Dating someone I had fucked. Hooking up with this person in a bathroom while calling me.
Oh.
Just twisted shit where I was like, you didn't have to do this. I said you could fuck. The reason I liked you is because you were a slut. You know what I mean? I liked that you were slutty. It's not like I was trying to dim your life. I was just like, well, I'll see you in a month and a half when we could see each other. You should just fuck whoever you want. Denying it and then doing it. It's like, what the fuck?
How old was that person you at this time?
We're the same age. So it was like when we were 30, 29, 30. Oh, 32?
30 was when I stopped being bullshitting. I was kind of bullshitting.
They're still bullshitting. I just found out from mutuals that she's doing this shit with a new person right now.
See, I heard this thing about lesbians, that there's a lot of fuckboy lesbians.
They are a fuckboy, but they're bi. They like to fuck like all their guy friends too, and then all the guys are obsessed with them, and she refuses to date them. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, lucky you got out of that, I think. That sounds like a psychopath.
I know, and they're so famous, so successful, and it's like maybe not that famous, honestly, but it sucks when the people pop in.
Yeah, my buddy broke up with a girl he was dating and she got a new TV show and they put a billboard of her outside of his window.
Yeah, like when Netflix is like, you'd like this. I'm like, I don't like it. But before we started dating, I knew that when she was a young person, she lied about having brain cancer at summer camp. So I knew.
Well, some had to have happened to her to be this psycho. You know, but, you know, that's as being a liberal person as I am, you know, each person has their own. Sometimes I do feel me taking the whatever the other side of everything sometimes is also like, well, you know, some people did have hard times and they didn't turn out to be a piece of shit.
I know. The one quote is you can't expect people to act normal in an abnormal circumstances.
Yes.
It's always like, why didn't you call the cops? Why didn't you leave? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And it's like we're trying to make people act normal when shit is fucked. So I don't know.
All right, the murder, so we're going to go back.
But some people get a good therapist or a good something, or something clicks and they can pass through. I don't know. Life's fucking.
I think I got older. Like, I was definitely, like, borderline fuckboy doing my own thing. And then I just got older and I was like, you know, I'm just going to want to be a good guy and like people, like my girlfriend and not do anything bad. Because, man, you ever cheat on someone?
No, but I've been the other person.
Oh, okay.
Like, I made my other ex fuck me to cheat on his new girlfriend.
Oh, went back to guys on that one, huh?
That was nice. Yeah, like, he was dating someone new, and I was like, I'm going to make you fuck me.
I know. It's almost so fun until it...
You're going to cheat on your fucking future wife. That's what you're going to do.
It's so fun until it... until you're done, and everybody came, and you're like, this probably wasn't the best idea ever. Oh, when you cheat on someone.
Your
phone is your enemy. Every time it goes off, you're like, this is the time I get caught.
I just don't get, because that means you don't like that person. Let them free.
For me, I was just a weak person back in the day.
You couldn't let them go.
Yeah, it was like, I'll either get caught and we break up, or I don't get caught and
But I you can't being... stop. Did you get caught?
Did I get caught? You know, when I was doing it, it never ended well. But, you know, that was years ago, maybe 7, 8 years ago. I had fun. All right, let's
My
go
mom
to the...
always says, speaking of all this story and all stories, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. You know?
Yeah, but I don't know if that's... I think in just the way of you doing things hard. Like, I don't think I cheat at stand-up or stuff like that. But all right, let's go to the next guy. The murder of Judge Joe Wood. The murder of Judge Joe Wood is a messy, convoluted knot of different stories converging. It involves Judge Wood, Judge Jim Carr, Charles Harrelson, Joanne Starr, Jimmy, Joe, Liz Chagra, Larry Culbreth, Alan Brown, Chris Lambroth, the FBI, the CIA, and many other parties. There's a lot of mystery surrounding both the murderer and the motivation behind the assassination of Judge Joe Wood, but the facts of the murder remain the same. 3 months before Judge Wood was killed, there was an assassination attempt on Judge James Kerr. Kerr was putting together a large-scale indictment of one Jimmy Chagra, and James Wood was set to proceed over the case. Because of the assassination attempt on Judge Kerr, Judge Wood was given federal protection for 3 months, but eventually was annoyed enough that he ordered the protection to be lifted. Not a good idea.
No, always accept orders of protection.
They don't give it out to normal people. The FBI is not just trying to help out random people. If they want to do it, but you know, it's like a Texas judge. He's like, well, you know, he wants to kill me, gonna have to find me. Just kind of like that bullshit.
Yeah, this happened. I'm a Law and Order SVU person, and it's always these I don't need this. And it's like, just take it. You're still tough. Just take it. Someone's trying to kill you.
Especially these people back in the 70s, like an old guy in the 70s. There's just like this weird machismo thing that was just bullshit. May 29th, 1979, Judge Wood and his wife were both leaving their apartment complex. You think a judge might have a house in the morning to go to work. But Judge Wood pulled back in when he saw his wife's car had a flat tire. She went inside to do something. He leaned over to look at the flat tire and was shot in the back a single time by a sniper rifle. His wife, hearing the shot, ran outside to find her husband bleeding out in the parking lot. She held his head in her arms and asked, "Who shot you, Johnny Dubs?" A sniper rifle is the way I've always said I would kill someone if I'm an assassin. You're an assassin. How are you killing someone and not get caught?
Did you watch, what's that amazing show with Sandra Oh and the Comer? Killing Eve. Did you watch Killing Eve?
I have no idea what that is, no.
Oh my God, you gotta watch Killing Eve. It's so fucking good. The best fucking assassin ever created. She's like a hot blonde, like sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
But she likes to do things interesting. You know, if you work in perfume, she'll make a poisonous perfume. Yeah, like she likes that. I would get caught, but maybe I wanna choke someone. I think I wanna strangle someone with like a rope. Yeah. And I think that would be it. But I don't know if I would get caught. I mean, sniper rifle is obviously, but then trajectories, and if you were on a building, I don't know. I want to strangle someone from behind is what I'm learning.
It does feel like you do that No Country for Old Men, like you're a little bit higher than him. You're like pulling on it.
Yeah.
That does seem kind of, not fun, but.
To like the air end, and it's like you're working out.
Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of staring off into space as you're choking this person's life out.
Yeah. That's fuck. What about you?
I'd do a sniper rifle. I've always thought about it.
Or like a boat push off, like, you know.
But then I'm there. If a sniper rifle, I'll shoot you from the woods. No one ever saw me. How the fuck are you going to catch me if I can find a way to not have the sniper rifle on me?
Yeah.
There's just no way.
Yeah.
There's one eyewitness that saw Charles in the apartment complex, a woman named Chris Lambros. She bumped into a strange man on her way to work and dismissed it. But when she heard the judge had been shot, she immediately called the FBI. May 30th, 1979.
Wrong call.
Yeah, I know. But also, like, who just calls the FBI?
And I'm sorry, what did Judge Wood do to warrant? Did he find someone guilty?
So this is the weirdest thing. Well, we'll find out later. That the guy was like, this guy's overseeing this case to put me away. And he's like, kill the judge. I don't know. I don't know if that works to end your case, but it's definitely kind of fucking gnarly.
Mistrial, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mistrial. The ending of Jack Harrelson's going to be very interesting.
But to call the FBI.
Yeah, like back in the day, too, there's no computers. You go on the yellow pages and look up the FBI.
You know the FBI called me during the pandemic.
No, what'd you do? Talk shit about the president?
I was fighting on Twitter, mm-hmm. And someone threatened to, like, bomb my family's house. And someone else had tagged the FBI and CIA and all these people in it. And so the FBI actually called my sister. And then she texted me and she was like, the FBI is calling you, but they're on your side. And I was like, okay. But we still didn't trust them. So then my sister called the FBI offices while I was talking to him. And he put me on hold to answer her call. And so then
one guy at FBI answering all the calls?
She knew his name because he had called her. So she, like, called the offices and was like, I'd like to speak to this person. And then he put me on hold. And so then she texted me. She's like, it's him. It's legit. And so
I like that. You ran your own little operation on the FBI.
Yeah. And, you know, at one point he was like, don't do this, blah, blah. And I go, sir, we're in a pandemic. I know I shouldn't fight online. What do you want from me? Like, we all do things that aren't good for us. And but then he was like, what's your address? And I was like, I'm not telling you. But, like, of course,
the FBI could find it out in 2 seconds. Yeah.
But I was
He's like, your Postmate account is linked here and you have nachos coming to your house right now.
Yeah, I was still being like a dumb white bitch when I was just like, yeah, well, I don't fucking need to tell you shit. Yeah. And but as someone that loves this kind of shit, it was cool to get called by the FBI.
In high school, MySpace just started. A girl in my 2 years younger than me was yelling that she wanted to kill George Bush. FBI came to her house. Did this whole thing. She was like an upper echelon kind of person, though. She was like rich. And they made a big coup de grace, but it was obviously she wasn't going to do anything.
Yeah.
The next year, we got new maybe social studies or history books, and her story was in there.
What?
Of a girl calling, saying she wanted to kill the police, and the whole thing had it. I think even her name was in there. It's pretty cool.
Wow. All
right, May 30th, 1979. The following day, Jack Dean, head of the Texas Rangers, called the San Antonio office of the FBI and said the assassination sounded like the work of a hitman, Charles Harrelson. June 7th, 1979, the FBI receives another tip from a man named Hampton Robinson, who had a story to tell about Charles Harrelson and Jimmy Chagra. Jimmy Chagra was a drug dealer and a big one. At one point, he was responsible for 75% of the marijuana being sold in the United States.
We love you, Jimmy.
Good job, Jimmy boy. And he has an incredible story to how he started getting into smuggling. He was living in El Paso in the 1970s and became frustrated with the quality of Mexican weed. We've all been there. Eventually, he said, fuck it, I'm going to Colombia. A little far, but okay. And he went down there with all the money he had. A couple months later, he had made enough connections to lead him to a group of native people growing marijuana in the forest, and he placed an order for 1,800 pounds delivered to the U.S.
I would love to know how many pounds of weed I've smoked in my life.
You know, I sold drugs, like really sold drugs.
I'm learning that right now.
So I sold drugs from 13 to 26. I sold large amounts and grew large amounts of marijuana.
Why did you stop?
So I stopped doing football because I got good drug selling. And I stopped selling drugs because I got good at comedy.
Okay.
And each of them wasn't worth risking the other. Stopped skateboarding to go into football. Stopped football because, I mean, I was going to try for JC. They wanted me, but I wouldn't have been that great, you know. And then stopped selling drugs because I was comedy. I was like, I probably shouldn't ruin this. I'm kind of doing good in Northern California.
Were you getting high on your own supply or professional?
So, no. I sold weed and Norcos.
Okay.
I used to run over the Mexican border, buy Norcos, and walk them across for years.
Scared?
The last time I ever did it was one of the scariest moments of my fucking life. I was about to go to jail, but I'll tell you that outside of this. I think I've said it before. Later that night, two Colombians met him at a hotel room and said that they had a boatload of weed. According to them, it was 60,000 pounds. They also said that they had a crew and that they would front him the weed as long as he paid it back later. Great idea to have the Colombian fucking cartel front you weed. Jimmy gave.
But why would they even offer that?
Okay, so the reason you want to front someone weed is because once I front you something, I then own you. You owe me. Doesn't necessarily I'm going to beat you or everything, but you can't go to someone else, right? So I used to get fronts from my big drug dealer. So he would front me a pound. I'd sell it. I'd make the money off top, get the money back to him. But the money I'm making off top, and if I don't save it, I can't get enough to buy my own thing, and then I can shop. But otherwise, if I keep going to you, you're like, yeah, this week, pounds, 2,200. Then your next week, you're like, it's not that good. It's 1,600. Or it's, yeah, we're getting low. It's $3,000. I have nowhere I can go to. I owe you $1,000. You're a scary person. That's why you're from people.
How high up did you go? Because it's like, where do the drugs actually go from? Like, I buy it from you, and then you go to this guy. Like, what level were you dealing with?
Well, I became a middleman to other people below me that would sell on the street, but it was just marijuana. I never did cocaine. Okay. I never sold meth or heroin or anything. It was pills, real pills, and then marijuana. And the marijuana I got to people who grow it, and I sold it to cannabis clubs. Jimmy gave them the address.
You felt cool, right?
I was pretty cool, man. I was pretty cool. People liked me. And people also probably, you know, got to be a weird spot where it's like, at the end of it, like, do I want to be known as a drug dealer for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
No, not really. I had other aspirations in life. Jimmy gave them the address of a meeting house near Boston, flew back to the U.S., and 6 days later, the weed ship was a mile offshore, and he got 60,000 pounds of marijuana. Hell of a chance old Jimmy took on himself, a true self-starter, doing something that in the end would be his downfall. What made you start stand-up? When, where, and why?
Embarrassing, but the movie Superbad came out, and I was like, I'm writing a movie like that with girls. I'm writing a girl Superbad. And so I signed up for Second City, like, writing and improv classes. And then very early on in that, someone said someone from my high school was doing an open mic, and I should go hang out. So I was hanging out at this open mic, and I just saw this one guy, and I was like, it's classic. I could do that. And I went up, and I could, you know, I was like so, I barely did 2 minutes, turned red, shook. And then I was like, I'm coming back. And then I wrote all these jokes, came back a week later and like crushed it. And I was like, okay,
that's what I want.
This is it. And I never went back to Second City classes ever, because once you like, you find that. And then I did all these music mics and weird mics. And then a week later, like Sunday, that was on a Monday. And then Sunday, I went to Shuba's open mic. And that's where I met people I'm still friends with today, you know? And it was all the Chicago scene. And then they all told me the other mics. And then that was it. And
you had a good Chicago class around you.
Yeah, and the ones before us, like, I think we had good role models. Yeah. So, like, Hannibal had left. And Hannibal was like kind of the standard of how hard you have to work. And so I'm really grateful for that. Because sometimes you look up to the wrong person.
Yeah, you go with a road guy, shitty road guy, and you're just opening for him, driving everywhere.
But I remember I went to see Hannibal at Zany's, and then I went to an open mic and he was there. And I went, oh, this is what comedy is. Okay, I got it. Like that moment actually like solidified everything. I was like, oh, this motherfucker is headlining Zany's and doing this mic. Like, you just have to do everything.
Yeah. I am not doing open mics together. I don't give a fuck. I will not do that anymore. Not in LA. Maybe hometown. I go home and do hometown mics because it's like they're packed. You know, Sacramento had a great open mic scene. All right. Hampton Robinson said that.
Well, but if you were headlining a club somewhere and they were like, come to this mic, it's not like you'd have to sign up and wait. They would put you up.
Yeah.
they'd be like, oh my God.
It would be, if it was my hometown, I'll do it. But like, I'm not going
to
go.
I went to Edmonton. I was in Edmonton and I went to an open mic on like the Sunday night.
But you probably made all those people's nights, those open micers.
I had fun. It was like the hipster neighborhood, and I had just been living in the mall for a week, so it was just nice to see people.
Yeah, going to these cold places is a little interesting how they live. All right, Hampton Robinson said that he was approached by Charles Harrelson about joining him on a trip to the World Series. I didn't forget you're even doing this. Yeah, yeah.
We're back to poker, baby.
We're back to the poker. Harrelson had the intent of getting into Jimmy Chagra's pockets, and Hampton suggested that Harrelson offer to find the men that killed Jimmy's brother. So Jimmy was the guy with all the weed. Hampton's just another guy. Charles is now, Mr. Harrelson's now back in it. Jimmy's brother Lee was a defense attorney in El Paso, and on December 23rd, 1978, he was found shot to death in his office, probably doing shady shit. So Charleston wants to go in with Jimmy Chagra because Jimmy Chagra has all the weed, right? Hampton Robinson and Charles Harrelson met Jimmy Chagra and started gambling, and Charles offered to find the men that killed his brother. It's a great deal, you know, everyone wants that. As the story goes, Jimmy said what was important to him was the upcoming trial he had in front of Judge Joe Wood, and that getting rid of the judge and having a new trial would be beneficial. October 1979, the official grand jury investigation into the assassination of Judge Joe Wood begins, and all informants and suspects are called to testify. Charles shows up and laid out a detailed alibi, placing him in Dallas on the day of the murder. February 1st, 1980, Charles was arrested for having cocaine and loaded dice, and his bail gets paid the same day. After he was out, he went down to El Paso to hang with Joe Chagra, Jimmy's younger brother, and he met a woman named Virginia Farrow. He was her bodyguard and lover.
Wait, so he got arrested in Texas
and
bailed out the day that the judge was shot.
So he keeps getting bailed out, too. So this guy, As the best lawyer, but
do you think
have.
The FBI and CIA are like annoyed? They're like, fucking yes. him again?
Yes. I think they're annoyed. And they either each time got to say, are we going to kill this guy? Or are we just going to keep helping out? And it shows a lot of times on a lot of these cases when the FBI helps you out, they kind of just keep helping you out to keep things going.
Wow. 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 Wow.
Oh, this is great. Okay. So February 1st, September 1st, so almost a year later, September 1st, 1981, Charles Harrelson was high as a kite after mainlining some cocaine, and he stole Virginia's son's Corvette and went for a joyride. At one point, he thought there was a bomb on his muffler, so he got out of the car and started shooting it. One of the bullets hit a tire, and he was stranded in the middle of Texas, high on blow and paranoid as all get out. Wow, high on cocaine, shooting his own car, and stranded in the middle of bumfuck Texas. What was one time you felt lost, abandoned, or out of luck?
I mean, probably in jail, but I didn't know that I would get, that my sister, you know, my sister Why'd would you get go to jail? Me. I was being a drunk, young, dumb bitch. So the first one, an DUI. The second one was, like, I assaulted an officer. It was a wild night. In the dorms, and then I got arrested at a White Sox game, and I have no idea what happened. And actually, I was stranded because my friend had my purse. It was the 06 home opener White Sox. It was like the year after they won the World Series, and I didn't even make it till the third inning. And I woke up in jail. They let me out on my own recognizance, but I was at the South Side, and all I had was like my bag of shoelaces. And I had no money. She had my purse. I had nothing, no phone, nothing. And so the only address I knew was 420 Surf Street.
It was a buddy. It's a fantastic address.
Yeah. And so I got into a cab. I ran away. I didn't pay the cab. I didn't have anything.
What do they do when you don't pay? They chase you or they go?
We exchanged information, but I was like, yeah, I'd never paid this man. But he got me to 420. I mean, I was like, a lone girl with nothing on the South Side. Like, I don't know, but I'm glad he picked me up. Well, I was trying to get into people's cars and they did not want to take me. So that sucks. There's like a Jeep. And then this is like, I've talked about this before, but so I show up to my friend's house thinking like, I'm about to get sympathy. This is the worst. I got arrested again.
This is 420 Surfside Road,
right? Surf Street, yeah. Surf Street. And she was in the middle of an abortion. She was like in an abortion pill. And so, like, I've come thinking I've hit rock bottom. And then she's like, I'm mid-abortion. And I was like, okay, well, I'll be here for you. But
you're like, I got some shoelaces if you need anything.
Yeah. But she was also, like, I was under 21. And she was a grown person in her 30s. So I don't know how annoying I was. I don't know. But I remember eating, like, frozen Easter candy. She had like Easter candy in the freezer.
Just peeps. Rock hard peeps sucking on them. Nice. Yeah.
But I think that was the one, because then when I find, like, she got me a car to go back to the suburbs, and my friend was so fucking mad at me. She was so mad.
Was she at the game with you?
Yeah. It was her birthday present.
Oh. She ever forgive you?
Yeah, but it's like twisted.
It was never the same?
No, because we were supposed to see our friend that night and she died a week later. And so that was fucked, obviously. Mm-hmm. And our friendship, the thing about her, like, that was fucked, but she would get arrested all the time, too. Like, she fell asleep at the wheel at a red light. Like, she, like, we were both bad girls, mm-hmm. but she got into Landmark. Do you know that cult? It's like this, you pay for a weekend of therapy, $500, and then they get you, mm-hmm. and they, like, break up your life and help you out. And she got really into this cult, and that's what, like, kind of ended our friendship, the cult stuff. But she blamed me for everything for so long, and then the cult stuff happened. But then she got pistol-whipped in the face, ended up in the hospital. Her boyfriend called me. Of course, I went to the hospital, so we became friends again because I realized how precious life yeah. is. But just was never the same. And I don't know. And I haven't seen her in years now.
You had to check on her, and that other girl from middle school is cutting her legs. And you got a lot of people you got to check on Instagram. Probably Facebook people, I'd guess. Some of them.
But my friend tried to make things better. But once you're in a cult, you're not yourself. Like, no. You're acting kind you're of.
Brainwashed.
Yeah.
It's weird as fuck.
I wonder where she is. I mean, we had a friendship for years, but it wasn't good. And it's set up. This is like a different podcast. Yeah. Sorry.
Are you at 10:30 or 10:45?
10:35.
Let's go. You got less than 10 minutes for your spot.
Okay.
Want to take a break? And then we got five more pages.
Great.
You good, Tony?
No, my friend. It's like, fuck.
And that's part two of Charles Void Harrelson with my buddy, Lisa Traeger. I mean, how good is this episode? How good is this goddamn podcast? We got part three coming up next week. This is the first three-parter. I don't think we're going to keep it as a tradition, but, you know, we'll go back down to the part twos or a good old-fashioned part one. But thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. Bye, chumps.